Hello everyone and welcome to the Cycling Day and Extra channel. Today we're doing another one of our World Tour previews or the monuments. It is Paro-Bay, the big one for many people, the hell of the north. And of course I'm joined by Mr. Gregor himself, Ewan Wilson. And yeah, Ewan, Paro-Bay, it's definitely one of my favorite one day races, that's for sure. What about you?
Well, I guess it's kind of up there with many people and their favorite one day races. It's one of the five monuments, the second of our two cobble ones, and the only monument in France. So it should be an exciting affair in what some call the Queen of the Classics.
Yeah, last year, Ewan, we saw Dylan van Baarle take the victory. This year, he's going to be riding for a different team, but we'll talk. Well, we're not even sure if he's riding, but we'll talk about that in the favorites section. But what awaits the riders from Paris-Roubaix?
Well, exactly that. The race doesn't begin in Paris. Instead, it begins in Compiègne, as it has done since 1968. Well, Compiègne, it is known for Roubaix, but also for the armistice signed in 1918 that ended World War I. That was signed in a train carriage just outside of the town of Compiègne. However, for the first 100 kilometers of Paris-Roubaix, there's not really much on offer. It's flat roads, tarmac, no cobbles on offer, but it will be important in the formation of the breakaway, and as we've seen over the past couple of years, there will undoubtedly be racing from the gun. The 54 kilometers of cobblestones will begin at 160 kilometers to go after the first 100 kilometers of racing. This comes in Trois-Villes. The rating of that sector is 3 stars, and from there, well, the sectors come thick and fast, with some very familiar town names and sector names lighting up the early half of the race. Notably, though, the gateway to hell, as it's known, will come at 100 kilometers to go at the Trouée d'Auberge, or Wallers, as it's known to some fans. This is undoubtedly one of the hardest sectors of the race. 5 stars in difficulty. The mythical Trouée d'Auberge will really be sort of the opening to what will be the competitive side of Roubaix, when sort of the metaphorical feces will be hitting the fan. After Auberge, we'll have sort of other difficult sectors to come, with 3 and 4 star sectors. However, the next 5 star sector on offer will come at 48 kilometers to go at Mont-Saint-Pervel. This 5 star sector will last 3 kilometers. It's one of the most difficult cobblestone roads that we're going to be tackling in Paris-Roubaix, and it will probably be deciding some of the big splits and some of the big moves. From here, moving northwards towards our final destination, we come across more sectors of cobbles, with the double billing of Confins and Pavel and Carrefour de l'Arme, or the final 5-star sector, coming at 20 kilometers to go. Once we negotiate the Carrefour de l'Arbre, the crossroads of the wood, we then have our final cobble sectors, not quite the most difficult in terms of their sort of star difficulty and rating. However, the tactics will come into play here as riders sort of fight for the victory in the dying moments. They come at Grosseteste-Willems and finally in Roubaix city centre. But that kind of cobblestones you can do on your city bike. Nevertheless, the final couple hundred metres of the race will take place in the infamous open-air Roubaix Velodrome, serving as the final coliseum of this race, where the winner will be crowned with their cobblestone trophy. For Paris-Roubaix 2023.
Yeah, thank you for that, Ewan. A spectacular race. So rugged, the cobbles, as we know. We've actually known that personally, going to the Turin-Arenberg. What a horrendous experience that was. Yeah, where shall we begin? I think in terms of favorites, we might as well. Well, we could start with Ineos, since they are the defending champions, but we're not. We're going to be starting with Jumbo-Visma, who has the defending champion now in their ranks. And Ewan, Jumbo-Visma, such a phenomenal force this year. We've talked about it so many times, but not at Ronde van Vlaanderen and Milan-San Remo, the two monuments that we've had so far, and they haven't been able to capitalize on their success that they've had in the minor classics. They have a strong team here, all of them very competent in the one-day races. But yeah, how do you see Jumbo-Visma doing in the Ronde van Vlaanderen this year? Oh, and Wout van Aert was second as well last year.
Yeah, it's not often you see a Roubaix winner change teams the year after their success, but Dylan van Baarle has done that. But I mean, in true van Baarle fashion, I think we're going to be overlooking him once again and looking towards his teammate Wout van Aert, who has an awful lot more pressure and reputation on his shoulders coming into this race. Wout has competed in Roubaix on 4 different occasions, finishing in 13th, 22nd, 7th, and in second position last year. So this will be his 5th participation, which definitely proves that he He knows these roads well enough now. He's been through sort of the cycles of bad luck that he had in 2018 and 2019. He's turned a new page at Paris-Roubaix. And I mean, it definitely points towards something special. I think out of all of these monuments and one-day races that we've seen from Wout van Aert, I think Roubaix is actually the one that's most suited to him. Where he misses the mark in Ronde van Vlaanderen is that he doesn't have the explosive uphill nature that a Pogacar or a Mathieu van der Poel has. What Wout has that the others don't have is an engine. And I think he's going to capitalize that engine and use it well in Roubaix, because I mean, we saw it last year. He was just sort of cool, calm and collected, sort of towing that second group behind Van Baarle. And now with Van Baarle as an ally of his own, I mean, it definitely is, it's going to be super, super useful for him to sort of isolate other teams and to make their lives more difficult. We saw Jumbo-Visma kind of glitch last week at the Ronde van Vlaanderen, but I feel like in Roubaix, they're going to have their act together. They've got Christophe Laporte, Nathan van Hooijdonk, and Tim van Dijk, who's on good form, to help them as well.
I mean, Ewan, we've been talking about Wout van Aert, that he's had this, well, you said it to everyone in the Tour of Flanders preview, that he has a bit of a choking habit in the big occasions, and we even saw him losing out the sprint to Mats Pettersson as well. So I mean, you would think that he needs to come here by himself. And could they potentially use Laporte, Dylan Mobile, send them up the road? It was much what we saw with Nicky Terpstra, for instance, where they had very strong cards in a very elite group, and then they sent Terpstra up and everyone was looking elsewhere. And then yeah, is that the only way that they're going to win, or are they strong enough to drop everyone and get rid, and we're going to have a 1-2-3 Jumbo-Visma, like with the Johan Museo crazy feat back in, yeah, in the 90s?
Well, I think what's different to that other Jumbo-Visma sort of AI-generated 3D performances that we've seen at sort of, we saw Adrie last year, we saw it at Omloop as well, we've seen it so many times, is that those races have hillier sectors. They're also not monuments. A lot of the time, they sort of caught teams sleeping on uphill sectors, which just made it easier for them to attack off the front. In Roubaix, it's flatter, it's harder to sort of benefit off hills and the profile of the sort of, well, topological profile of the race. So that will make it difficult, but they do have brute force more than many other teams here, particularly, I mean, Alpecin-Fenix or Alpecin-Dukurnik, who we're going to talk about in a bit. I mean, while given what Roubaix is like as well, I think it's important to point out that his choking habit, it's down to sort of these reduced bunch sprints in sort of hillier profile races where he should be performing better, but he's been wiped out maybe by the hills and so forth along the way. Whereas a Roubaix, he actually won the reduced sprint in Roubaix last year for second place. He benefits here because in Roubaix, he's more likely to be up against the big engines like a Schaeffenkoen, like a Pippo Ganna and so forth. I mean, he did lose to Pippo Ganna early this year. But these kind of like bigger guys, the bigger engines who are more sort of rulers than they are sprinters, instead of it being Van der Poel or Sonny Colbrelli or, I don't know, one of these like sort of hillier, punchier guys like Christophe Laporte or whatever. I think he's going to benefit from the fact that he's more likely to be isolated with guys who can't sprint as well as him. That minimizes the risk. Because once again, he's been in, I think 16 monuments now, and he's only won one.
Yeah, it's true. It's not a great batting average for someone who is seen as a talent of a generation. Okay, he's done many other crazy accolades. We can't put that down either. But anyways, moving on. Ineos Grenadiers, you mentioned it there. Philippe Ugarna looked very good in Milan-San Remo. We've always talked him up as potentially winning this. We talked about it last year, that we made a whole video where we said he is going to win it at some point in his career. He's won the Espoir, the under-23 version. The conversion rate there isn't great. To put in perspective, Tom Pidcock has won it as well, and he's not going to be winning it anytime soon. Ineos Grenadiers, Ewan, do you think potentially they can do something here? Magnus Sheffield, Mikael Kwiatkowski are the only two names that they've kind of released.
I really like Ugarna for a Roubaix profile. I think he could do really, really well. He has that raw engine that I think works very well in Roubaix. We saw it with Van Baarle, we saw it with Terpstra. These guys who just have that raw power to get away from everybody. And Ganna has that more than lots of these guys. Maybe his power is a little bit more visceral than the likes of Wout, than the likes of King Kung and the other guys that we're going to be mentioning as key favorites. Oh, he is an unproven talent in Roubaix, at least at the senior level. Last year had a lot of bad luck, but we didn't quite see what Pippo Ganna could bring to the table. We've seen he's good at ground. gravel racing, but we don't know really about the cobbles. Also, bear in mind, he had a big swollen knee at Gent Wevelgem that ruled him out of Ronde and the other cobble classics during the week. So maybe that there's another sort of factor in this in terms of injury and whether he's come back from the injury or not. Also, Ineos have just been very depleted this year in the classics. They were so good last year, a bit like Antimarché. But this year, they're just sort of missing the mark. They've had a lot of bad luck with people crashing and people getting injured. Magnus Sheffield has been on the concrete of Belgium more than anybody else this year, it seems, crashing in every single race he begins. He's even frustrated with it. And then Ben Turner's not going to be here. He would have been a great help as well. They don't have Van Baarle anymore. Fiat's never gone great in Roubaix. Maybe what, Luke Rowe's going to be here? I'm really not sort of enthralled by Ineos, but I'd love to see Ganna win. You know, it's like my heart wants it, but my brain is saying no.
Yeah, the similarities with Fabian Cancellara, well, not really, because he's never done well in Ronde van Vlaanderen, but it's only really the World Championships title we're clinging on to for a similarity there. But a guy who finished third last year, quite surprisingly, Stefan Kung, is probably who we should talk about. And I think
surprising.
Yeah. No,
I'm pretty sure I put him on my podium last year. He was like one of the guys at the classics. This year, he's missing it.
Yeah, but I mean, his results were terrible before this. Fifth in Ronde. No, I mean, as in Paris-Roubaix. No. Stefan Kung, great guy, great rider, etc., etc. But yeah, but like, it's kind of the Ghana thing. He has the profile, he has the engine. He just needs to ride away from everyone. But he's in a good form already this season. Sixth place in the Ronde van Vlaanderen last week.
And sixth place at Adrie-Price as well. Kung, like, if there's any monument that suits him, it's this one. Kung has been knocking at the door of a big classics win for a while, but he just doesn't quite have it in him to get there. It's like that glass ceiling he just can't quite break. It's like Mikel Landa at a Grand Tour, or even a one-week-long stage race. It's like he has the talent, but it just never quite happens or materializes itself. I've backed King Kung so much over the past couple of years, and I can't help but feel like it's a futile battle for the Stefan Kung supporters, that he's so good. He will be there in top 10. If he stays on his bike, he'll be there. But I just think maybe winning this race is a step too far. But he will be in contention. Let's say that. He's definitely on good form. It's not as good as last year, but Groupama as a whole collective have been looking better than last year. So, I mean, you just got to like compare and contrast.
Mentioning Landa, my heart still breaks over the Giro d'Italia 2021. But yeah, I mean, you and Groupama FDJ, they also have Arnaud Démare, a guy who's finished in the top six before. So, I mean,
that was almost 10 years ago.
2017.
That was 6 years ago. Still. It's good. Démare's been looking like hard. He's been looking hard here this year. Rode a good Brugge de Panne, which is probably quite a good test of this. Flat cobble profile, bad weather, meh part of the world. Well, maybe
just randomly slating.
The Panaslander. If you've been, you'll know. But, I mean, we'll see.
Terrible year. Let's just put that in there. He hasn't taken a single victory, not even a single top five. So I think it's a bit far-fetched from myself saying that. And like you said, well, De Panna 14th as well. I mean, it's,
He was up there in the front group for a lot of the race, though. If you've got Démare working with King Kung, King Kung's the guy you're going to be watching. I know Démare does not win Roubaix. It's not happening.
Watch him win it now. That would be funny.
It's not going to.
It would be interesting. It would be so cool to see him win it. And like you said, he's been knocking on the door. But I mean, where should we? I think the elephant in the room that we haven't touched on yet, Alpes in De Koenig. We talked about it over on the Echelon, the 10th episode, if you haven't checked that out already. You're kind of backing Caden Groves, but kind of not. But obviously, Mathieu van der Poel is the big draw here. Ninth last year, finished podium in that crazy edition in 2021 as well. That biblical edition, that amazing. I don't think we're ever going to see a such a good edition. But Mathieu van der Poel for the victory. Or, well, yes, for Philipsen and Caden Groves.
Yeah, Philipsen and Groves are my good sort of wild cards if van der Poel isn't there. I'm a little bit worried that Van der Poel, sometimes he will either be up there in contention or he will be underwhelming. There is no in-between. It's a bit like Wout van Aert occupies the in-between. Mathieu van der Poel is very much exceptional or mid.
What was Ronde?
Ronde, he was really good. It's just that Pogacar was just like a degree better. And then Wout very much was in the sort of mid-pack category. Yeah, third in 2021, ninth place last year. Although it was a mid performance, he still came in top 10 last year. He's got the engine to do this, but I think Roubaix doesn't quite suit his skill set. What Van der Poel has that none of these other guys who are starting this race have is that sort of one quadrillion watts attacking power on an uphill gradient. I'm not sure if you've looked at sort of the relief map, the profile. For Roubaix, there aren't many hills. The Tour d'Arenberg is at like a sort of 1% gradient, 2% maybe. But there is nowhere that Mathieu can use that raw power. We haven't seen him sort of attack away on like a flat area before. He usually sort of goes away on these uphills, either in cyclocross or in road racing. So, I mean, for him to win, it would probably be from a reduced sprint. I don't quite see him going solo all the way to the end. And we saw the reduced sprint in the strange 2021 edition where he just missed out completely. But then all eyes were on him. It was also in autumn, out of the normal schedule. So it's hard to compare, but I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical here.
Yeah, that's true. Omi would all love to see it. It would be the first victory he takes that isn't linked to his dad or his late grandfather. Or Raymond Poulidor or Paribet? No, it doesn't ring a bell.
I doubt him.
But I mean, well, moving on, probably our last team before going to our predictions, etc., etc. It's not going to be a Sudal Quickstep because they have burnt us too many times this year, despite Kasper Asgreen doing sort of well, finishing seventh at Ronde van Vlaanderen. Tomelier as well was up there in the breakaway. But Ewan, Trek Segafredo, Mass Pills in third place. Stoven looked fairly good. They're going to have the injection of the young American Quinn Simon as well. And yeah, what do you think of them?
Yeah, it's a strong roster, but I would not bet any money on Mads Pedersen here. He ran a really good Ronde, but
blasphemy.
I know, I like Mads. He's done, Scott, let's do some history lesson here. Mads Pedersen has done Paris-Roubaix four times. He's never finished inside the top 50.
Believe,
yes, maybe. Jasper Stuyven, however, in the past five editions of Paris-Roubaix, he has finished in top 10 on three occasions. Who do you bet? Jasper Stuyven. Stuyven worked for Maz last weekend. Maz works for Stuyven this weekend. I don't see Pedersen contending this one. It's the same argument with Asgreen. Asgreen similarly has a poor record in Roubaix where the other classics suit him. It's like its own classics entity. And if you can't quite hit the ground running in the past, it's hard to see you hitting the ground running on this occasion, and I'm lacking evidence of Mads Pedersen.
Sad times. But I mean, before we go into our predictions, just some outsiders as well. I mean, John Degenkolb, you mentioned this, Ewan. He doesn't get enough respect. Such a phenomenal palmarès. We know the injuries, etc., but he's starting. It would be great to see him win again.
It's not happening.
Yeah. Peter Sagan as well. His final Paris-Roubaix, as we said, he was down in a crash. Binyam Girmay as well is starting Paris-Roubaix. He's not going to be, well, who knows if he's even starting after that horrendous crash we saw. Former runner-up Nils Pollitt as well. Alexander Kristoff, I would love to see him win it, but I just, again, like, it's so weird the record he has in Ronde, which doesn't seem like it would suit him on paper, but on Roubaix, it's trash. Like, I think 10th is the highest he's finished.
Once again, they're two very different entities, and only sort of a select amount of riders can hit the ground running in one of them. It is what it is. One of whom, I think, Florian Vermees. Look out for him. He's on good form.
Also, Arnaud Daly, who could win it. We've said that every single every single race we've done a preview, it's not going to happen. Matej Morohej could be a very good outsider because he was fifth last year. You never really know where he is. But he came down and like crashed with Binnie, I think. So who knows what he's feeling like. We haven't got any riders from Astana. I mean, love and I hate him. I would have loved to have seen Gianni Moscon win that 2021 edition.
Let's give a mention to Gleb Siritsa. I believe will be on the start list. And he's quickly becoming cycling Twitter's favorite meme.
Now coming to our favorite part of the show, and we're going to change it a bit. Now we're going to react to our Tour of Flanders. So we're going to, it's easier for us anyway, for everyone, so we can laugh at ourselves. A lot of you were laughing at me when I was making my predictions, and that was Pogacar at the win, Kasper Asgreen in second, and Mats Pedersen third. So two out of three. Ewan, you had Mathieu van der Poel down for the win, not backing your man, Tadej Pogacar, for once. I think you have to resign from the Liverpool chapter of the Tadej Pogacar fan club.
Yeah, I also probably do owe you an apology because I gave you an awful... I pulled a very judgmental face when you said that Kasper Asgreen and Mads Pedersen would be in contention because they actually were. But yeah, I mean, I went for the very straightforward podium. I'm going more risky today, don't worry. But I was right about Wout. I said Wout would not win a reduced sprint. What did he do? He didn't win a reduced sprint. What can I say?
Neither
It
of us
works.
had Wout van Aert on the podium, just to point that out, showing our
Yeah.
faith in him. But yeah, nevertheless, Ewan, who is your 2023 Paris-Roubaix podium?
Well, I'm going to counteract what I just pointed out. And I will say that Wout van Aert will finish in third place. I think second place goes to Stephen Kung. I think the win's going to go to Matej Mohoric. Matej has been targeting this race all year. It's been his big goal. And he is a guy who he's so sort of clever. He does so much research, reads so much. He will know Roubaix so well. We saw it last year at San Remo. He knew that descent. Every sort of inch of that descent of the Poggio, he knew it. Similar with the Tour de France stage in Le Creusot, he knew what was happening on that stage and he dominated it. He's going to be there and look out for his team. He's got a couple of really good contenders. And my hotshot outsider is Andrea Pascalon, his teammate, who's looking very good and rode a good Roubaix last year in top 20. So my winner, once again, Matej.
Fair enough. But it's over on this side of the podcast that everyone comes to place their bets. And no, I think my record in Paris-Roubaix is terrible. I'm going to say the winner is. No, let's go third place. Third place, Christoph. Highest place position ever. Second place, we're going to have Stephen Kung. And number one, oh. I messed up here. Who's it gonna be? Is it gonna be Dutch, Danish, Dutch, Danish? I'm gonna follow my heart, and it's gonna be Mathieu van der Poel takes his first ever Paris-Roubaix. But anyways, that's it for our Paris-Roubaix show. Make sure to subscribe to the channel here on the second day and extra. Comment down below who you think's gonna be winning, and of course, we will include your comments in the next video as well, which will be the Amstel Gold. And make sure to join us for the live stream. We had so many of you over on the Cycling Day main channel for the race on Sunday, so we look forward to seeing you there as well. But with that, that's basically it for us. And of course, as always, thank you for watching and have a nice day.